Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that Bacon and his army of rebels had heard that Governor Berkeley had successfully raised an army to fight Bacon and his men. The governor had around 1,000 men, and Bacon had around 300 men. But even though there were three of the governor's men for every one of Bacon's men, the governor's men were considered cowards who wouldn't dare face them in a battle. They were inexperienced and unused to the roughness of war. Bacon's men, on the other hand, had fought many battles, had faced near starvation, and had the people cheering them on. When Bacon's army arrived, they were tired, hungry, and had a major battle looming ahead of them. They set up camp just outside the walls of Jamestown. They worked through the night, digging trenches and cutting down trees and bushes and gathering dirt to build their defensive protections. The men were certain that the governor's army would fire on them at dawn. They had a lot of work to do and not enough time to do it. So, Bacon came up with a plan to delay the governor's men from shooting at them. He ordered his own men to go out on horse and kidnap the wives of the governor's most important supporters. He even captured his own cousin's wife. He had no intention of harming the women, but his men's safety was his top priority. Even though this was kind of messed up, it was a good plan, because it worked. The next day, the governor's men awoke to a wonderful feeling that today would be the day that they could end the rebels once and for all. They lined the walls of Jamestown, aimed their weapons at the rebel scum, and waited for the order to fire. But their joy turned to horror as they realized that their wives had been placed on a ledge above the area where Bacon and his men were still toiling, building, and readying themselves. If they fired on the rebels, their own wives would be at risk of being hit. They were outraged and saw it as cowardly, but they dared not fire a single shot. Finally, the rebels who had marched all day before and had worked to build the defenses all through the night were finished. They sent the wives away and immediately got into position, ready for the fight. The governor's men opened fire, but they did little damage. The rebels had built such tremendous defenses that they couldn't harm any of them. Then the rebels returned fire. Some of the governor's men were wounded, and at least one was dead. As predicted, the governor's men were nothing more than cowards. At the first shots from the rebels, they laid down their weapons and fled for their lives. Only 20 of the 1,000 men remained. Those few remaining men forced the governor to abandon Jamestown before the rebels got inside. So the governor fled with the rest of them as Bacon's men rushed from their defensive positions. The next morning, Bacon's army entered Jamestown. The capital of the colony was once again under their control. Once inside, he received word that one of his former allies had gathered a large army, also of nearly 1,000 men, and was marching towards Jamestown to fight for the governor. On top of that, the governor hadn't run away entirely. He was anchored about 20 miles away, where he was making plans to recapture the town. The army, led by Bacon's friend, wasn't like the governor's army. It wasn't certain if they were cowards or not. It could be real battle, with real chances of loss and death. He could stay and fight, or the other option was to abandon Jamestown as well. The only problem with this was that the governor, still being so close by, could easily come back and retake the town. Their whole plans of attacking the natives had changed in order to march to Jamestown and take the city. If they left and the governor regained it, it would have all been for nothing. They couldn't let that happen. So, they did the only other thing they could think of. They burned it to the ground. Even their churches and their assembly house. They set fire to the town that night, and within a few hours, it was nothing more than ash. Even his two closest advisors burned their own houses down. As the flames consumed everything, the governor watched from a distance. He later reported that the rebels had burnt 5 of his houses. Yeah, the governor had 5 houses just in Jamestown. He had more in other places, too. He reported that 20 of his friends' houses were burned down as well. Once the work was done, Bacon and his men left Jamestown and headed towards Gloucester County. After he arrived in Gloucester County, he learned that the 1,000-man army headed by his former ally was now marching towards Gloucester, and not Jamestown, and they would be there soon. With no time to waste, Bacon gathered his men once again, and with the beating of the drums, they marched to meet them. They marched for several days before word reached them that the 1,000-man army had broken up and fled. The likely reason for this is that some of them had been forced to fight for the governor and probably didn't want to face Bacon on the field. Whatever the reason, Bacon was again in charge of the entire colony. But this time, things were different. Remember all those wealthy men that were dragged to the meeting where Bacon forced them to take oaths of loyalty and oaths to resist the coming British army? Bacon had made the claim that by resisting the king's soldiers, they were actually doing the king a favor, because all they needed to do was resist the British army long enough for them to explain to the king why the rebels were the good guys and why the rebels were actually protecting the colony from the natives who had been murdering them. The king would surely understand that the rebellion was in his and everyone else's best interests. The wealthy men hadn't wanted to agree to resist the king's soldiers, but Bacon had forced them. These wealthy men at least had made it appear as though the rebels had the support of the upper class. Well, now these wealthy, important men were on the governor's side. Bacon no longer had the appearance of being anything other than a bunch of rebels. Many of the prominent gentlemen that had given them their support and had taken his three oaths were now fighting on the side of the governor. And those British soldiers, around 2,000 of them, they were coming. They would be in Virginia within a few weeks. Without the wealthy agreeing to resist the British army, would the rebels stand with him when they arrived? Even though the wealthy, important gentlemen had already abandoned him, it was likely that they would have abandoned him when the British soldiers arrived. The wealthy were also suffering from some of England's laws against trading with other countries, and the wealthy were also paying high taxes. But, like the other colonists, they didn't want to break off from Britain, and they definitely didn't want to go to war with Britain. The rebels had no chance of beating the British at this time. That wouldn't come until over 100 years later. This was still 1676. But Bacon and his men had accomplished a lot since the rebellion had begun. It was possible that the king would call a halt to the British army just long enough to hear him out. Either way, he had to at least try. So he called the men in Gloucester County who weren't already part of his army. Once they were gathered at the courthouse, he delivered a speech and asked the men to pledge their loyalty to him. He also asked them to swear an oath that if the British army attempted to use force against them, they would all fight or fall in the defense of the colony. And further, if the British won and some of them survived the battle, those who were left would leave the colony rather than submit to a life in which they were not allowed to defend themselves against their native attackers. The men in Gloucester didn't want to stand against England. No matter what England had done or what their own government had done, they were Englishmen. Virginia soil was the same as English soil. They would not stand against the king. They told Bacon that they wanted to stay out of it and not pick sides. But Bacon replied that if they weren't with him, they were his enemies. To Bacon, they were actually worse than enemies. They were the type of men who would allow others to bleed and save them without lifting a finger to help. Even so, he didn't take his anger out on them. Instead, he told them to return home. The next order of business was what to do with those they had captured who had fought for the governor. Bacon set up a special court that would hear the cases of these men. The trials were held and the captives were found guilty of treason against the colony. Instead of executing them, he offered to trade them for some of the rebels that the governor had captured. But the governor refused. Again, instead of executing the guilty men, Bacon let some of them go. Even though some had been let go, the men in Gloucester County saw how those seen as enemies could be placed on trial and declared traitors. Bacon had told the men in Gloucester County that those who didn't join him were his enemies, and they didn't want to risk this. So they decided that rather than stay out of it without picking a side, they would join Bacon and his men, and they took an oath of loyalty to him. After this, they did what any band of rebels would do, and they plundered the governor's houses and the houses of all of his friends. That is, the ones they hadn't burned to the ground in Jamestown. The homeowners were gone. They were with the governor. There was nothing they could do. The rebels took cows, pigs, sheep, corn, clothes, and anything else they could lift and carry away. Soon, predictably, the rebels started plundering the houses of other rebels and of Bacon's supporters. When this happened, Bacon called for all looting to come to a stop. But for the governor and his friends, the damage had been done. The looting that had been allowed to continue against Bacon's enemies would unleash a torrent of retaliation the likes the country had never seen before or since. But before we get into the governor's brutal retaliation, the rebellion needed to end. There was one thing above all else that started the end. That was Bacon's death. He had been sick for a long time with dysentery, which is an infection that makes you head to the bathroom a lot and has killed countless kings and important people throughout history. The illness finally caught up with him and he was unable to continue fighting. So, in Gloucester County, where he had last summoned people around him and made them take oaths of loyalty, he found a bed to rest on, and on which he would die. While on his deathbed, he often asked whether there were enough soldiers outside the house, and whether or not the king's army had landed in Virginia. But his luck ran out, and he died before the rebellion could be finished. This left a man named John Ingram in charge. Ingram had been Bacon's right-hand man in his army, so he had some experience leading, and Bacon's army cheered for him when he became their leader. But he was no Nathaniel Bacon. No one could replace his charm, his ability to rally people around him, and the symbol of power that he represented to the people. Considering that the governor had not yet given up the fight against Bacon, and that people were slowly wanting to be neutral instead of immediately joining Bacon, and the fact that England was likely going to send over an army to stop the rebellion, which the rebel army was extremely unlikely to win against at this time, the rebellion would have in all likelihood ended soon enough. But Bacon's death sped it up to the end. Ingram lacked the ability to control the rebel army the way Bacon had been able to. Soon, the rebel army fell into disagreement and distrust amongst themselves. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss the final end of the rebellion. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.